Farmington branch right now, and you just made the point that they just moved the rail in that it, to make it a narrow gauge. That was finished in 1923, is that correct?
That's correct.
As long as we're in that period, you know when that was started and why, the Farmington branch, and where it came to here in Durango. Do you want to talk about that a minute?
Well, the Farmington branch was started in 1903 with construction out of Carbon Junction.
And that's right south of Durango, right down here by KIUP.
Yes.
Okay.
They started hauling stuff in here then, and they had teams working and crews already. I guess they've been surveying already to do where they were going. So by 1905, the railroad was ready to operate. They had shipped in the part of the engines and had them ready, and they were using the standard gauge cars that they had shipped in, transferring it to what we called grubs. That's directly behind the sales barn.
All right.
The town.
Yes.
And then the switch crew here in Durango would haul all of the equipment and material and everything in from Durango, where the crews were bringing here, because they were, and take it down to Grubbs, where they had the narrow gauge track was up on the high side and the standard gauge below, so that it was easy to transfer right straight across.
I see. Mm-hmm. From one flat car to another.
One flat car to another, or all right. A box car, or whatever happened.
Yes,
to
okay. Mm-hmm. The rails were that close. Mm-hmm. All right.
Well, it wasn't after 1903, of course, then they started regular service. That was mixed train service. They had two coaches.
Two passenger coaches?
Two passenger coaches.
And
one of them was half coach and half baggage or express mail.
Tell me, why did they start that line? What were they hauling? And what do you think the reason for starting that line was?
Well, somewhere in the years prior to that, they were surveyors that come up the alley between Main Avenue and Second Avenue East here.
That's in Durango.
You don't, Durango was not a very big town in those days.
That alley isn't very wide
and
today.
That alley isn't very wide either.
No.
But I can remember distinctly that survey team coming up through there, and they told us that they were surveying for the Southern Pacific.
All right, the Southern
and
Pacific.
The reason for that was that they had coal ground at Hespers and up at Porter.
The Southern Pacific did.
The Southern Pacific. And
all
they were
right.
Coming up here to get that coal.
Yes.
So they, to keep the Southern Pacific from coming in here and fouling up the Durango yards, because I don't see in the world, and when you look at the territory, how a railroad could come out of there and cross the, over to the north side of the, cross the river, and go up on Crestview and out, or the cemetery, and out that way up around Hespers to get to Hespers.
To get to that coal at Porter,
yeah,
and at Hespers.
At Hespers.
Yes.
I just don't see how they could get out of there.
Why would they be doing that when the Rio Grande Southern already had a railroad beginning in 1890 out to Porter and Hesperus?
They wanted their standard gauge railroad. They wanted their own railroad.
I see. All right. Mm-hmm. So, to keep the Southern Pacific from getting in here, the Denver and Rio Grande did certain things. And one of the things was to build this Farmington
build
branch.
Build the Farmington branch. That's right.
Okay. And what did they haul?
Well, they hauled the Farmington area was a great fruit area. In those early days, we didn't haul much stock because there was no way to stockyards, and then in Durango, big enough to hold all the stock, and they had no stockyards. So they hauled the fruit and the supplies from the east, merchandise and such as that, back to Farmington.
Yes.
But every town, we used to stop at every railroad crossing, and they were all named. Take from Riverside, Cedar Hill.
Yeah.
Johnson's Crossing, one on either side there, on down Perry's, just every place, Flora Vista, Hood's, and all of those stops were coming back, but we'd load fruit in those in the fall.
Yeah. Did you ever run that?
I don't think I ever run the as a conductor because I wasn't promoted at that time, I guess, come to think about it.
Yeah.
I wasn't promoted until 1922.
All right.
So I did run the stutter gauge, but I broke on there a lot.
Did you?
Yes.
All right. Now, getting back to that Southern Pacific, there wasn't any danger of the Santa Fe, which was a closer railroad, getting into the Denver and Rio Grande area, was there?
Not likely, because of the agreement they made at over the pass at Raton.
In the 1870s.
Yes.
Where Santa Fe got the right-of-way through Raton Pass, and the Denver and Rio Grande got the right-of-way through the Royal Gorge and out the Arkansas River.
That's right.
Area to the west.
So,
and that was an agreement that was kept by both roads.
Yes, it was kept.
And they agreed not to go into an area and compete.
Yes.
Okay, all right.
But
that didn't apply to the Southern Pacific.
No, that didn't apply to the Southern Pacific.
No, just the Santa Fe and the Denver and Rio Grande.
You know, after this agreement was made, the Rio Grande built as far as Espanola South down on the Chile line. Then they had to have another.
Now, the Chile line went from Santa Fe.
Santa Fe to Antonita.
Antonita, okay.
Well, they built from Antonita to Espanola, the Rio Grande. Then they had another company with the stockholders in Santa Fe built the railroad from Santa Fe to Espanola.
Mm-hmm.
And the Rio Grande was able to operate over that track into Santa Fe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Eventually, it finally was owned by the Denver.
By Denver and Rio Grande.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
All right. Now that explains some of the finagling that went on. Looking back, where was the Southern Pacific going to take that coal? Had they mined it at Porter and at Hesperus?
I suppose they would take it to where they would connect with the Rock Island someplace.
Yes.
Or they could from there on south, because there would be no other way to get down south.
They could have gone then either into California with that coal, or they could have gone as far up as Chicago with that coal.
They could have.
Okay. Now, getting back to this Farmington branch, they laid the standard gauge there then, and it opened in 1905.
Mm-hmm.
Was there pretty good business? Do you remember it pretty well?
Yeah, we had a lot of passenger business.
A lot of passengers?
You got to remember that the highways were not like they are today. They were just old country roads, farm roads, you might say.
All right.
And so the railroad then was very handy for people coming from Farmington, Durango, catch the train, go on to Denver on the train. That's where the business is all coming from.
Yes. And you could stop, if you wanted to stop at Cedar Hill, you could get off at Cedar Hill.
Yeah, any of those places.
Any place,
yeah.
All right.
So it was a good deal for the railroad, because they eventually picked up a lot of traffic calls.
Right. You mentioned that from here to Alamosa was 10 hours. How long was it from here to Denver on the passenger train?
Well, they left here in the morning, and it was overnight. You get right in Denver the next morning.
All right.
Over the years, they shortened that time up considerably, because we didn't leave here at 11:30 in the morning and got into Denver 7:30 the next morning.
Okay. How many passenger trains a day in 1925, the end of the period we're talking about, how many passenger trains a day came into Durango?
We had one from Silverton, one from Alamosa, one from Telluride, one from Farmington.
The Telluride one was actually on the Rio Grande Southern.
Rio Grande
but
Southern.
They used the same depot. And that was an agreement. Actually, during a large part of the time that the Rio Grande Southern was in operation, it was owned, wasn't it? Or a large part of the stock was owned by the Denver and Rio Grande?
That's right.
So rolling stock, motive power, things like that were likely to be interchanged.
They were interchanged, or they were loaned, or leased.
Leased.
In fact, they had many ways of covering up their financial transactions.
Mm-hmm.
And so that the Rio Grande Southern, would actually, if it went broke, or they gave it up for collateral for loans, the railroad, but they didn't give up the property of the Rio Grande.
Sure, sure. Yes, I understand that. Did you ever meet Otto Mears, who was the one who started the Rio Grande Southern?
Yes. Yes, I bet he'd been Silverton in the early days.
Of course, General Palmer was long since dead.
Yes.
I don't know when, but...
I don't know when.
I'm sure he was.
Anyway, Jeffrey took over, I think, as president.
When General Palmer died?
General Palmer died, and they were in financial trouble at that time, and they went into receivership, and I'm sure that Jeffrey must have been the receiver, because that was the practice of promoting the receiver as president, if
sure.
he was doing a good job.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it made sense, because he probably knew more about it, didn't he, than anybody
yes.
Alive at that yes. time, so it made a little bit of sense. As far as the ICC or somebody like that is
yes.
concerned, because that would be the agency that would appoint the receiver. Is this not true?
Not necessarily.
No?
The federal courts would do that.
Oh, the court would do it. Okay. The bankruptcy court
yeah.
would appoint a receiver.
Yeah, appoint a receiver.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
They...
Well, you think of anything else... Up to 1925, you've already mentioned that the Farmington branch was changed to narrow gauge beginning in 1923. What did they do with the standard gauge stuff, rolling stock that they had, do you know?
I think they sold it off to farmers
Anybody?
Along the way.
Oh, that's why a lot of these boxcars are...
Well, that's probably gone to this day.
Well, there's still a few sitting around
there's
the countryside.
Some, well, there's maybe a few sitting
if they put them on
yeah.
a decent foundation.
Yeah.
And they
yeah.
used them for corn cribs or yeah, storage of all kinds. Don't
The engines, I don't know where those engines went to from here.
Mm-hmm.
They evidently disappeared while I was not working on a Durango.
You know what type of engine they were? They didn't have to be very heavy, did
no,
they?
No, they were 500... I believe one was 556 or 58 something, and 528.
They only had two or three, I suppose.
Yeah, that's all they had, three.
Because
yeah.
it's a pretty short run if you come right
short
down
Short run,
to
and they had to have one in repair and one in reserve. So if it got stuck, derailed or something, you'd have something to go down there and pull it
okay.
off.
Were there any terrible wrecks that you think of up to 1925?
As far as I know, the Farmington branch never had any.
No wrecks at all.
As far up on the standard gauge.
Okay.
But the minute that we started hauling oil, and the traffic was heavier then, well, then we had plenty of derailments.
Is this because deterioration of the tracks and the ties and the roadbed?
That's right.
And not enough ballast or
no
what?
Ballast. And
because oil is heavy, one of those tank cars full of oil is pretty heavy.
Pretty
right?
heavy.
Yeah.
Two times that I know, while I was on the Farmington running the Farmington branch train, we had a derailment with 10 cars of oil at Bondad, just over the highway crossing. It's there they do.
Yeah.
And then the next one was down here, what we call Lodo. It's the just before you come into the cuts. We used to call the Slate Cuts.
Down here
down
south
the
of town where
down
you can
the
see
south
it.
Of town,
yeah.
yes.
Mm-hmm. Down there, Moving Mountain in that general area? No,
well, a little further south.
A little further south,
yeah.
okay. Uh-huh. The shale.
Those are the only two real bad accidents where we had to have a...
How about on... were there many times up to 1925 when traffic on the railroad was completely shut down because of snow in the wintertime?
No.
No, they kept it pretty well open.
One year they had trouble with the snow on the Farmington branch because they didn't have any snow equipment.
Uh-huh.
And they had a little trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't tell you what time or what period. But
no. How about from here to Silverton?
Well, we've had many of a snowslide blocking the railroad.
And block it for 2 or 3 months?
3 months, easy.
Yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When did they develop that rotary snow plow to put on the narrow gauge? And was that built right here?
No, that was built in Alamosa. Probably in Burnham is where it was made, the mm-hmm. rotaries that were used here.
Mm-hmm.
However, I think the Rio Grande Southern developed that idea when W.D. Lee was superintendent over there.
Mm-hmm. When he was...
It... sometime between when he went over there, it should have been in around 1901 or 1902, something of that kind of.
Mm-hmm. In this time, at one time in there, or for a short period of time, Durango was a general office of the railroad. Is that not true? What does that mean?
Well, that means the general office where they... had a general superintendent. They had more officers here. That's when they owned all the stock of the Rio Grande Southern, because then it was all one railroad operated from Durango.
Mm-hmm.
My next-door neighbor up there, George Densmore, was a traveling engineer on the Southern from Durango here, over at the Southern. We had another one from Durango east to Chama, and he also took care of the Farmington and the Silverbrights.
But a general office is, it's not the headquarters, but it's higher than a superintendency.
Yes.
Okay.
Just above the superintendent's level.
Okay. All right. And was part of that in order to get into New Mexico and keep the Southern Pacific from coming up?
It probably was. In the meantime, here, somewhere along those periods of times, the New Mexico Central was built.
Where did the New Mexico Central?
From Santa Fe south.
All right.
And I don't know where they tapped on south of there. But anyway, it was either close to the Southern Pacific or close to the Rock Island. And the McAtee, who was the general agent and also the trainmaster or assistant superintendent in Durango during the same period, he was to get the business moving from Durango and down over that railroad. They expected to have a lot of coal business.
Mm-hmm.
This W.D. Lee was also superintendent or manager, or whatever they want, on that railroad at one time.
I see.
Also was the superintendent of the Alamosa Division and over at Salida. I knew his son, and his son, Elliot Lee, was a banker in the Guaranteed Trust of New York.
Mm-hmm.
He was a great friend of Neil Capps.
Yes, former president of the First National Bank here. Yes.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, part of the reason then, man in the general office, he is supposed to get freight and everything like that moving into New Mexico so that the Denver and Rio Grande can expand,
yes,
really, and keep the Southern Pacific out, or anybody else as far as that goes.
Well, Young was just before the time of Pyatt. They went into receivership right shortly again. Then Pyatt took over as president. During this area in there between 1920, the end of 22 and 25, mm-hmm, is when they started ordering engines. They ordered the 470s first. And then they ordered 100 refrigerator cars, extra 6 feet longer than the present narrow gauge cars.
Yeah.
100 stock cars, the same length. You get about 4 head more of cattle in these cars.
Yeah. They were really building up the rolling stock.
They were building up the rolling stock.
And you say new locomotives?
New locomotives. 1926, then they ordered another bunch of heavier locomotives, the 480s,
mm-hmm,
that were built by Baldwin.
Now they're using some of those at the present time.
They're still using some of those at the present time.
Right.
Then the Rio Grande converted what they call the little 1000s into the 490s. And we have some of those here working on the Taulic and
Toltec and Cumbres
Railroad.
And yes,
we have several here with Mr. Bradshaw using on the Silverton Branch.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do they pull passenger trains and everything, or they just work?
They're just as good as the smaller engine, yes.
Okay.
They used the smaller engine for passenger because it was easier to get over the hill and saved running a freight train or a flanger in front of the passenger train over Cumbres in snowy weather.
Mm-hmm. Were there any attempts at abandonment before 1925, abandoning part of this road in this area?
I don't think there was any attempts at abandonment of the actual road. There was attempts to change schedules and time, remove railroads or change, like they run a passenger train from Silverton to Farmington with the headquarters in Farmington. They stayed overnight.
And that's where it ended.
Well,
and that's kind of silly because they had to come right back here to Carbon Junction.
That was to provide service for the passenger train from Durango to Denver.
And were there many boardings there?
I don't think it proved satisfactory because it didn't last very long.
Was this part of a scheme of some kind to get more boardings in New Mexico, do you think?
I think
and prove the need for...
Everything that the railroad did was a scheme for something, but ordinarily the public didn't know about.
Yes.
And that's why it was blind for the public to actually go in and protest these things when it was detrimental to their business as well as the everybody working for the railroad.
Sure,
yeah.
Sure. But were there attempts to get rid of passenger service up to 1925?
Yes, there were attempts to get rid of passenger service. Mm-hmm.
And do nothing but haul the freight.
That's right.
In and out, because that's what railroads are very, very good
at. It really
at.
Started after this passenger train from Silver to Farmington. They wanted to get rid of the passenger train from Durango to Silver.
Mm-hmm.
And they did.
To Silverton.
Yes.
Did they?
And they did, and they made it a mixed train.
Okay, it was a mixed train.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which means it had all kinds of cars.
Well, all the freight cars as well as...
And a caboose on the end.
Well, I guess they had a caboose on the end.
I suppose.
I don't think they did. I think they just used a coach.
Yeah, okay. Now, when did you become a conductor?
I was promoted in 1922.
And tell me what a conductor does.
Well, a conductor has charge of the train and the engine and all the crew members.
He's in charge.
He's in charge.
What he says goes. If he says stop, you stop.
You stop.
Mm-hmm.
If the engineer doesn't want to stop, well, you have an air valve in the caboose that you can stop him. Stop the train. Yeah.
That's that rope.
That's that rope in
rope
the
that goes
train,
through. Yeah.
Or a valve in the caboose on a freight train.
What did that valve do?
Well, it stopped the train. Set the air brakes.
Set the air brakes all over the
all
train.
All over the train.
Not just on the caboose.
No, all over the train.
Uh-huh. That'd stop him.
Yeah. That stops them, so that's happened many times.
The conductor's in charge.
He's really in charge.
Okay.
And he keeps all the records of the freight, delivers the freight and see that it's unloaded at the right stations, keeps track of the cars and where they're moved and where they're set out.
Sells tickets if anybody gets on and doesn't have a ticket.
Sells tickets.
Does, you kept all this in your little conductor's bag.
Kept it all in the...
In your little typewriter that you've donated to the center out here?
Yes.
Yeah.
All of those things were used.
And you had tickets that you could make out for any place and every place.
That's right.
And you had to account for all
on
money?
On passenger trains, you had all the tickets, cash fare tickets.
Yeah.
No other kind. They were just cash fare.
Cash fare,
for
yes.
For the conductor only.
All right.
But then he had he picked up all kinds of tickets. Maybe a ticket that's good to New York in return, going over 10 or 11 railroads.
And you just
so
punch
you'd
it.
Have to pick punch your coupon,
and then make
it was
a note.
The end of the railroad on this, the end of the trip on this railroad,
right?
Or punch it so that they could get their credit.
All right. Yes, because each railroad's going to get part.
Yes.
Of that. Okay, so he keeps all the records of that train, and he's in charge of that train.
He's in charge of the train.
Okay, and that is your seniority as a conductor then, from beginning in 1922.
That's right.
When did you retire from the railroad?
I retired in 1966.
In 1966, yes. So you had 40-some years then as a conductor.
As a conductor.
Altogether, you worked for the railroad 51
years?
51 years. Okay.
Yeah.
Taking that next 10-year period of 1925 up to 1935, and where you get into the Depression, what's the main thing you think about when you think of the railroad during those years? You were a conductor by that time.
Well, I still as a brakeman. As a senior,
I know, even though you had...
The business went up and down.
You got bumped every now and then.
Yes, you bet you did.
Yeah.
Well, they were still... following the footsteps of evidently the same board of directors, and
as the 1920s,
that was the latter part of the 1920s, of the young period of there, from 20 to 22 or 3 in there. So all of this improvements were still going on all of this time, and there were many changes then, trying to consolidate the passenger runs. Or change schedules. At the before all of this happened, though, you know, we had all these freight trains were scheduled out of here. 451 was the one coming from Chama,
yes.
452 going out.
Yes.
Up silver was 461, 462.
All right.
And like that, and so those, they had to get rid of all those because those were regular salaried positions for them by the month.
Yeah.
So they got rid of those and put about irregular service, freight service. Maybe every day as long as the business was here, but they didn't have to.
But they didn't have to when the business wasn't here.
Yeah, they didn't have to pay anybody when it wasn't.
Gave the management a lot more flexibility.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They could.
And we made a lot of concessions and gained a lot during those periods of time right in there.
There. Okay, we're going again now. And we're talking about that period from 1925 to 1935.
Now there's the start of building up the business.
Yes.
And then we have different management. Not the president of the railroad, but new managers of the railroad. So,
yes.
As they come on, why they see a different idea, so they want to change things. Not only rules, but the conditions of the railroad, how where you'll pick up the business.
Yeah.
And all of that kind of stuff. So that the that caused many hearings.
Before what agencies?
Before the PUC primarily, because most of
Public Utilities Commission
was within the state.
Yes.
Of Colorado.
All right.
So that is where I started attending these hearings, because to find out what was going on, I just was curiosity myself.
Yeah. Were most of these held in Denver, or were they held all over?
They were held in Durango.
Durango.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Practically all of them were held in Durango concerning the narrow gauge from Chama West.
Mm-hmm.
And
you got interested in it to find out what was going on.
What was going on.
Wondering what was going on, okay.
During this same period of time, our local brotherhoods conceived the idea of having clubs in Alamosa, railroad clubs, in Durango. And we were to promote business.
Business for the railroad.
Because we could see what the railroad was doing when they were buying up the truck and bus lines.
Yes.
And we were wanted the railroad, the people providing the business, to use rail service rather than truck and specify something.
And the reason they were buying up truck lines and bus lines was what?
Well,
why were they doing that, the railroad?
Primarily, I suppose they thought they could do away with some of the train service, cut down their expense. Primarily, it was a lot of expense that they wanted to get rid of.
Right. If they could get rid of a certain passenger train or something like that, they can save money.
Same
time, they're carrying the passengers or the freight either on trucks or on buses.
On buses.
All right.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all during that period of time, up to 1935, I think the 1935 is when they had the hearing here over the Pagosa Springs branch. And Perlman come right out and told them that they were going to get rid of the badger because it wasn't making money.
Who was Perlman?
Well, he was the general manager of the railroad company.
I see. Mm-hmm.
And he was the primary spokesman here. Although we had others, we had Eno.
Okay.
Well, it wasn't Harold Eno. He was the assistant in command at that time. I think I can't remember the name of the general passenger agent at that time. Wadley.
Wadley.
He was down here then to take the passenger side.
Mm-hmm.
And they had all this stuff all prepared, each one of those freight man, the passenger man, general manager, plus their attorneys.
Yeah. Now, they had statistics to show the business was going down. They didn't need certain things anymore.
That's right.
But the real part of the reason business was going down was the ownership of the bus and the truck.
That's right.
They were doing this deliberately in order to have some kind of a cause for abandonment or getting rid of a train, cutting down schedules
or
whatever.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, you mentioned these railroad clubs. Who belonged to these railroad clubs? Started by you trainmen.
All of the employees.
Yes.
Well, we had section men, so we had roundhouse employees, train and engine men, all part of the club business.
And what activities did you engage in?
We sent out questionnaires to the people, the shippers, and try to get them, ask them what they would consider better service to the business.
Yeah.
Or if they would continue to ship on the railroad.
Mm-hmm.
And to keep track of their records.
And then you presented these findings from these questionnaires and other information to these hearings before the PUC.
Eventually, we kept a copy of all that. Yeah. Most of it, we sent it into the railroad for their information, because Shulman's working for the railroad.
Right.
But we always had copies.
You always had copies.
Yes.
Did the railroad present these to the PUC?
Not always. They might have used it. They had plenty of statistics of their own, but they didn't use them.
Mm-hmm. Right. Uh-huh. Well, sometimes these were in conflict, weren't they? The what they wanted and what these questionnaires would show. Maybe.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yes, they were.
So sometimes they might not want to present those to the PUC.
Yes, right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How many of these, you belong to the one here in Durango,
right.
I suppose. Were you president of it or anything?
No, I never was president. I think Waylon Bruce was, he was the president here. I was very active in promoting all the things, writing up the stuff, the questionnaires and one thing or another.